Chapter 11. Adepts Yellow. Death Notices. Dangerous Kindness. I woke before dawn. It was still twilight outside, and the curtains of my room swayed in the cold breeze. I got dressed and went downstairs. On the way, I checked on Tal. He was profoundly asleep, curled on his bed. Crezier had made sure he was all right, given him a secondary mild opiate to reduce his trauma, and covered him with a blanket. He'd been out for the best part of 14 hours. Crezier had almost flipped out with fear when she discovered the captive in her box room was a Vessarine Janissary. I checked Tal's bindings, and he groaned softly as I disturbed the blanket. Amos was already up. Drinking caffeine he had brewed himself, he sat in Crezier's study, listening to the early morning Vox broadcasts. "Couldn't you sleep?" I asked. "I slept fine, Gregor, but I never sleep for long." I fetched another cup and poured caffeine from his pot. "There's nothing about us," he said, gesturing to the Vox.
"Nothing? It's most perturbatory. Not a word. Not even on the Arbites band.
Someone managed to hire 800 Vessarine killers, Uber. They have clout. The news has been withheld, or censored.
The others will know.
How do you mean?
Fishig? Nail? The moment they don't get a response from Spaten House, they'll know something is up.
I hope so. What did you make of our friend's tattoos?
Base Futu, just as I supposed. I cross-checked it using the doctor's cogitator.
He took out a note slate and adjusted his eyeglasses.
This mark bears witness that Vermico Tal, a Janissary, is owned by the clan Ettrick, and a bond of 10,000 zekel will be paid for his repatriation. He is of flesh made, and his flesh speaks for him.
Amos looked up at me.
Strange practice.
Totally in keeping with the Vessarine mindset. Janissaries are objects, material items. You might as well keep a cannon or a tank as a prisoner of war. They have no political affiliation, no loyalties within the particular frame of whatever conflict they're involved with. No use as a hostage. Putting that little incentive on each one makes things clear and simple. Puts a simple price on the matter and dissuades a captor from simply killing them.
How much is 10,000 zekel, then?
Enough, I should think.
What do we do with him when we leave?
Now, there was a question. I went into the kitchen to brew more caffeine and hunt for bread, and found Crezier juicing ploins and mountain tarberries in a chrome press. Her hair was loose, and she was wearing a short cream silk house robe.
"Oh," she said as I walked in.
"I'm sorry," I said, retreating.
"Oh, don't bother, Gregor. You've seen me in a lot less."
"Yes, you have."
"Fruit juice?"
"I was looking for caffeine, actually."
"How could I forget? Breakfasts on the terrace, me with my fruit and grain cakes, you with your caffeine and eggs and salt pork."
I filled a pan from the sink pump and lit the stove. Then I rinsed out the pot. "I suppose now's your opportunity to tell me I told you so," I said.
"What do you mean?"
"You always said fruit and grain loaf was the path to a healthy life, remember? You used to go on about diet and fibre and all sorts. Told me my intake of caffeine and alcohol and red meat would kill me."
"I take it back."
"Really?"
"It won't be your diet that kills you, Gregor," she said, suddenly biting at a fingernail.
"You were right, of course. Look at you."
"I'd rather not," she said,
crushing a ploin with excessive force. "You're as lovely as the day I first met you."
"The day you first met me, Gregor Eisenhorn, you were half comatose with anaesthetic, and I was wearing a scrub mask."
"How could I forget?" She looked at me witheringly. "Still," I said, "I'm not lying. I treated you badly. I'm still treating you badly. Someone like you doesn't deserve that." She tasted her pulpy juice drink.
"I won't argue with any of that, but it's nice to hear you admit it."
"It's the truth." "So's the fact you're still lovely." She sighed.
"Juvenat programs are all easy to administer. I look this way thanks to imperial science, not fruit juice."
"I still believe in fruit juice." She grinned.
"You don't look so bad yourself. Red meat and caffeine considered."
The pan began to boil. "I feel about 1,000 years old next to you. Life has not treated me kindly."
"Oh, I don't know. There's a nobility about your scars.
Something very masculine about the way you wear your age well.
I started to look in cupboards for the ground beans.
That canister there, she said.
The chicory blend you always used.
I've never lost the taste for it.
I took the tin canister and spooned out several measures into the pot.
Crazier, I said.
You should have let go of me a long time ago. I was never any good for you. I was never any good for anyone, truth be told.
I know, she said, but I can't. That's just the way of things.
I poured the boiling water into the pot and let it stand.
How's Elizabeth?
She asked suddenly.
I had been sort of waiting for that. I had broken my long relationship with Crazier Bershildi, in the end, because of Beckwin. Even though I knew Elizabeth and I could never be together in any way except friends, I knew I would never get past my love for her. It was too much in the way, and that could never be fair on Crazier. 25 years before, in that very house, I had told her as much, and walked away.
She's dying, I said.
Crazier put her glass down suddenly.
Dying?
Or already dead.
I told her what had happened on Dura.
Oh, God, Emperor, she said. You should go to her.
What could I do?
Be there, she said firmly. Be there, and tell her before it's too late.
How do you know I haven't already told her?
Because I know you, Gregor, too well.
Well, the two of you never... I mean...
No, she's an untouchable. I'm a psyker. That's the way it works.
And you never told her?
She knows.
Of course she knows. But you never told her?
No. She embraced me. I pulled her close. I thought of all the things I had never done, or never started, or never finished. Then I remembered all the things I had done, and could never undo.
The last thing you want is me, Crazier, I whispered into her hair. I'll be the judge of that.
The kitchen door burst open, and Amos limped in. Crazier and I let each other go. We could have been doing anything for all Amos cared.
You have to come and hear this, Gregor, he said.
He had been listening to the sub-sector service on the Vox, news from all around the Helican sub, some of it days or weeks old. By the time we were standing around the old set, the news had moved on to stock reports and shipping forecasts.
Well? I asked.
A report from Messina, Gregor. The upper levels of Spire 11 of Messina Prime were destroyed 24 hours ago by what was cited as a recidivist blast.
I went cold. Spire 11, Messina Prime.
That was the location of the residence I had leased for the use of the distaff. Nail and Burgundy had taken Elizabeth and Kara there. For safety.
The report said that over 10,000 lives had been lost, Amos murmured. The Messina RBTs are hunting for suspects, but it's been attributed to a radical Free Messina outfit.
I sat down, trembling.
Crazier crouched beside me, hugging me.
The distaff? Gone?
Beckwin? Nail? Kara Swole? Burgundy? It was too much.
I realized why Kanyar the Sharp had hired so many Vessarine Janissaries. Multiple strikes. Multiple worlds. What else had this Kanyar hit? What other pain had he already caused me? Who else had he killed?
What's going on?
Alina asked, coming in, rubbing her sleepy eyes. I paced the house and the courtyard garden. Two or three times I started up towards the box room, the auto pistol in my hand. Damn the bond, I would have vengeance. Each time I turned back, I'd counseled Medea against vengeance, and so I should listen to my own good advice. Killing Tal would be like breaking a sword. What was it Medea had said? It's a displacement activity. It's something you can lock on to and do because you can't do the thing you really want to do. I needed something, and it wasn't payback. So what was it? I needed to get back in the game. I needed to round up my allies. I needed to discover who Kanyar the Sharp was. And then, damn the advice I had given Medea, I needed to destroy him. At 9 sharp, Adept Cielo arrived with his clerk, having been summoned the day before. Both were hooded and cloaked, which I suppose was their idea of subtlety. I met with them in the drawing room, with Crezia in attendance. She had dressed in a trouser suit of beige murrey. Adept Cielo was an elderly, experienced astropath, one of the best the Guildhouse in Ravello had to offer.
I take it, sir, this is a private matter?
It is.
Are you purchasing my services in cash?
No, Adept, by direct fund transfer. I have a confidential message service which I wish to use. I expect the utmost discretion.
You have the guarantee of the Guild, sir,
said Cielo. His clerk opened a data slate and offered me the thumbprint scanner. I pressed my thumb against it and then entered my code.
Ah, said Cielo, as the slate chimed and displayed a readout. That's all sorted out. Your accounts have released the funds. Everything's in order, Mr. Ising. Let us proceed.
Of course, I wasn't using any accounts that were connected with the person of Gregor Eisenhorn. I had good reason to suspect my finances were under observation, if not frozen. But I wasn't even going to try, because that would let my enemy know that someone with the authority to access Gregor Eisenhorn's accounts was still alive, and it would be comparatively simple to trace that access. As with the various properties I owned, I had resources under other identities. Gorton Ising had several holdings with the Imperial Thracian Treasury, with enough funds for my current needs. I had set up the confidential message service many years before, so that I could send and receive messages without using my real identity. It was essentially an automatically maintained mailbox account that I could access using an astropath from any location. I could send messages through it and read any communiques that had been posted to it. The service was registered under the name Aegis. When Cielo accessed the Aegis account, there were no communiques waiting to be read. Composing the contents in Glossia, I had Cielo send warning messages to Fischig on Jura, to Messina, to agents of my organization on Thracian Primaris, Hesperus, Sarum, and Kartol. I used the signature Rosethorn. I also sent a private, coded, anonymous transmission to a friend outside the Helican subsector. It was a single-word message that read, Sanctum. I would wait for responses before I contacted my Lord Rorkan. I wanted to take things one step at a time. Not for the first time in my career. I wanted to stay out of sight, except to friends. Of course, even sending communiques in another name was risky. Many or all of the people I was trying to contact might be under surveillance themselves, if they hadn't already been eliminated. But Glossia was a private code. Even if my messages were intercepted, they would be impossible to decipher. The first responses arrived by noon the next day. Cielo's clerk came up from the Guildhouse to deliver them. One was a message from Fischig in Glossia that essentially told me he was already en route from Jura and would arrive at Gudrun in about 20 days. I dispatched a reply that emphasized caution and told him to contact me when he was close. The message Sanctum had been answered with the words Sanctum Arising in 15. There was no ident on the communique, and the source was deep space. The clerk then passed me a data slate.
The communiques to Messina, Thracian Primaris, Hesperus, and Kartol have all been returned as undeliverable. That is strange. The message from Hesperus has a statement from the local Arbites attached, recommending you get in touch with them directly. There has been no response from Sarum.
After the clerk had left, I discussed it with Amos. He was as alarmed as I was.
Undeliverable. Most perturbatory. And the interest of the Arbites is disturbing.
What progress with the names? I asked. He had been at work on Crezia's codifier all morning.
Nothing. No listing for a Marla Tare, and nothing on any Kanyar the Sharp. A Kanyar is a blade weapon, of course, a curved dagger from ancient Terra. The word occurs in several Imperium cultures.
Can you resource further?
Not using this machine. But your doctor friend is going to walk me to the Universitariat this afternoon and get me access to their main data engines.
He was gone for hours, until late in the evening. Crezia had teaching duties to perform, and Fabes was all but invisible. I was left alone with Alina. I checked the prisoner. He was awake but unresponsive. Crezia had left him a tray of food and some water before leaving, but it was untouched. I tried a few questions, but he didn't stir. He was zoned out in a post-interrogation stupor. Medea was still sleeping, but her life signs were good, and there was no trace of post-operative infection.
I kissed her forehead gently and went back to the kitchen. Alina was seated at the refectory table, one-third down a bottle of fine Hesperian claret. Without asking, she fetched me a glass and poured me some. I sat down with her. The kitchen doors were open, affording us a cool evening breeze and a fine view out over the courtyard to the Itaval. The mountain was ochre in the setting sun, and even as we watched, it gently shifted colour, becoming russet, then almost scarlet, then ultramarine.
"Have you eaten?" Alina asked.
"No." "Have you?"
"I'm not very hungry," she replied,
and drank a mouthful of wine. "I'm sorry, Alina," I said.
"Sorry, sir? Why?"
"Sorry that you should be in the middle of all this. It's an unpleasant business and costing us all dear." She smiled.
"You got me out of Spaten alive, sir. For that, I'm thankful."
"I only wish I could have got everyone out alive." She shrugged. I could tell she was haunted by the killing she had seen. Sastre's brave sacrifice in particular had scarred her. Alina Coy was only about 25, just a girl, and a new recruit to the distaff. She'd not seen any active service in the field yet. She'd been posted to Spaten as resident untouchable, something the distaff regarded as an easy job, to get her acclimatized to the work. Some acclimatization. "If you'd like to leave, I think that would be all right. I could arrange some adequate papers, some money. You could get off-world, to safety." Alina looked almost offended.
"I am a contracted untouchable in the pay of the distaff, sir. Perhaps, Emperor bless me, the last one alive. I knew service to an inquisitor would be dangerous when I started. I'm under no illusions."
"Even so?"
"No, sir. I'm strong enough for this. It may be extreme, but it's what I was hired to do. Besides..."
"Besides what?"
"Well, for one thing, we know that the enemy has at least one powerful psyker in his pay. That means you'll need an untouchable."
"True.
And I think I'd feel safer sticking with you, sir. If I went off on my own, I'd be looking over my shoulder for the rest of my life."
"Thank you, Alina. You could stop calling me sir now, though. If what we've been through these last few days can't be counted as a bonding process, I don't know what can."
"Right,"
she smiled. It was a change to see a smile in her face. She was tall and overly thin, in my opinion, always seeming edgy and nervous. The smile suited her. Neither of us said anything for a few moments.
"So, what should I call you?"
she asked eventually. We chatted idly for a while longer, until the Itaval had become black and the sky imperial blue. The stars were out.
"Do we have a plan?" she asked.
"Theoretically, we find out who is set so murderously against us and hunt him down. Practically, that means staying here, out of sight, for a while at least, then getting off planet."
"How long for that, do you think?"
"My preferred means of planet exit will be available in 15 days. She refilled our glasses.
"I like that. I like it when you sound like everything's under control."
"So do I," I chuckled.
"So once we're off planet,
what then? Practically speaking." "It depends on a few things. What we manage to turn up in the next 2 weeks. Whether I dare correspond with the Ordos."
"You don't think the Inquisition is involved, do you?"
"Not at all," I replied. It wasn't a lie, because I was sure we weren't in conflict with any external agency. But it wasn't entirely the truth, either. I had been in the job long enough to know that nothing is out of the question. But there was no point alarming her. It's simply that I think our enemy is so well coordinated, so well provided, that he's watching everything. If I contact the Inquisition, it could betray us. I took up my glass and drank a good measure of the fine red wine. So if nothing turns up, when we leave here, it's open. There are places we could run to find security, friends I could call upon. Our best bet might be to disappear and stay hidden until our plans are formalized. But I'm torn. I'd like to head to Messina, if there's a chance any of them are alive. Apart from roaming field agents engaged on diverse tasks, the distaff headquarters on Messina represented my only other base of operations. If it was gone, and Spaten House too, I was cut adrift.
"I had many friends at the distaff hall. I hope they're all right."
She looked at the table and fiddled with her glass.
I suppose you're most concerned about Madame Beckwin.
Well, I began.
She being such an old friend and colleague of yours, I mean. And that she was badly hurt on Jura. And everyone knows...
She stopped suddenly. Knows what, Helena?
Well, that you love her.
Everyone knows, do they?
You can't hide something like that. I've seen you together. You adore each other. But you're a psyche, and she's one of us. I know, I know. That doesn't mean you don't love her, all the same.
She looked at me and blushed.
This wine, she said. I've said far too much, haven't I?
No, Helena, said Crezia. Neither of us had heard her come in.
Talk some sense into him, will you? He has to go back and see her. It's the right thing.
Crezia was dressed in her formal tutorial robes. She took a glass from the rack, came to the table, and, finding the bottle was empty, set about opening another. How was your day? I asked, trying to change the subject.
I spent 4 hours lecturing the sophomore class on the principles of thoracic palpation. I've never seen such a crowd of ill-prepared dolts. When I got one fellow up for a practical, he took hold of the volunteer subject's thigh. How do you think my day was?
She sat down with us at the table.
I looked in on our guest. I'm concerned about his condition. He hasn't taken any food or drink, and he's only marginally responsive. I think you may have damaged him with your mental probings.
Either that, I said, or he's having an adverse reaction to the drugs.
Possibly. If he's the same in the morning, I'll run some blood work on him. Whatever, he's not well, and he's not comfortable. There's severe lividity in his hands and feet. You tied those bonds so damn tight.
As tight as they needed to be, Crezia. He's a Vessarine Janissary paid to murder me, don't forget.
Shut up, and pour me a drink.
The moment Amos came in, past 10 o'clock, I could tell something was wrong. He was carrying a small pile of data slates and accepted a drink from Helena without question, which was unusual for him. His hand was trembling as he raised the glass to sip. Even Crezia could see this was not like him. "Well, old friend?" I asked.
"I spent hours resourcing those names, Gregor. Still nothing on this Kanyar, though I assembled a list of planets that still use the word."
He slid a slate across to me.
"Mala Tare. A little more success there. Amala Tari was arrested by the Arbites on Halokan 5 years ago for participating in cult activity. She was pending trial when she escaped custody. She turned up twice more, on Felthon, where she was a known associate of the cult leader Berikin Paswold, and on Sansita, where she was wanted in connection with the murder of Hierarch Sansum and 5 Ministorum clerics. The Inquisition also has a warrant out for her restraint as a suspected rogue psyker."
So, an active participant in cult activity, then. I looked at the extracts Amos had put on a slate. They didn't tell me much more. If I contacted the Inquisition, they'd have a more complete file. Despite the risks, I felt inclined to get in touch with Rorkan.
"If it's the same woman," he replied.
There was no picture, but the physical description matched my mind's retrieved image. "What's her background?"
"There's nothing on that. Except that when questioned during her detention on Halokan, she claimed to be 37 and stated her birth world was Gudrun."
"Interesting," I said. "We should check her details against the planetary census and..."
"I believe you pay me to be thorough, Gregor," said Amos churlishly. "I've already done that. There's no record of her here. In fact, there is no one on Gudrun with the surname Tare or Tari. The surname does, however, occur on other worlds. Too many, in fact, to be of any help."
"So, savant," said Crezia, "what's really troubling you?"
Amos took another glug of wine and pushed a slate into the centre of the table.
"I was running out of options with the names, so I turned to something else. I inspected the news registers from across the subsector, hunting for keywords. You won't like it."
I read down the slate, my heart turning to cold stone. It showed me bulletin reports of incidents from several planets in the sub. Just little items, most of which wouldn't even have made column space beyond the regional news wires. Certainly the events reported wouldn't have been planetary news, and definitely not interplanetary. Amos had only found them because he had been specifically looking and trawling the Imperium's newswire data compendium. The first report was of the explosion on Messina. Messina Prime, the main hive, Spire 11. The blast had occurred at 10:50, local. That was chilling. By my estimation, the raid on Spaten had commenced at precisely the same time, given sidereal adjustments. The explosion had incinerated the uppermost 10 levels of the spire. The death toll was put at 11,600. The Lord Governor had declared a state of emergency. There was a long, appended list of properties and businesses destroyed. Amongst them, halfway down the second page, was the Thorn Institute, the name by which the distaff had been publicly known. No survivors. I supposed it could have been a coincidence, but I didn't believe in them. Which meant that my foe, this Kanyar the Sharp, had not hesitated to exterminate thousands of civilians just to take out the distaff. The news file stated that a proscribed movement calling itself the Scions of Messina had claimed responsibility. That group, it said, struck for Messina's independence from the Imperium. Which was frankly rubbish. Messina was as imperial as a planet culture got. The second report listed on the slate was filed from Kartol. A family touring Connor province on vacation had been found murdered by unknown gunmen. 2 men and 3 women. Identities were to follow as soon as they had been established. Authorities on Kartol estimated the time of death at between 10 and midnight, 2 days back. I had sent my agent, Leris Finton, along with Byron Fackal, Lois Narron, and 2 untouchables, to Kartol 5 months earlier, to gather evidence concerning a death cult in the Connor region. They had reported back regularly. Dear God Emperor. I scrolled to the next item, from Thracian Primaris. A private residence in Hive 62 had been firebombed just before midnight. 8 dead, unidentified. The location was listed as 62 Up Hive, level 114871, which was the address of the subsidiary office I maintained on the capital world of the Helican subsector. Barnd Ferrical, who had been with me for 30 years, ran that place with a staff of 7. The next, Hesperus, 2 men killed in a firefight with Juve gangs, just before midnight a week ago. They had wandered into the wrong part of town, an Arbites spokesman said. Luther Witt and Gan Blake, 2 of the most capable undercover agents I ran, had been operating on Hesperus for 1 year, seeking to uncover a Zetian cult that was preying on the Juve population of the Underhives. Next, Sarum, capital world of the Antimar sub. One of my most promising pupils, interrogator Devre Shibor, had gone there under my instruction 8 months prior to infiltrate and expose a chaotophiliac ring in the central university. She had posed as Dr. Zaza Baj, a historian from Punzel. The news item recorded the death, apparently by suicide, of the promising academic Baj. Her body, dead for about 8 hours, had been discovered in her bathroom at Choir Bell this same morning. And then the last, the most shocking. From the Samater Global Newswire, posted 1 week ago. The residential home of Inquisitor Nathan Inchabel had been attacked by an unidentified enemy and obliterated. Inchabel was listed amongst the dead. I sat back. They were all looking at me. Amos was leaning his chin on his hands, and the 2 women were staring with anxious patience. "They're all dead," I said. "Everyone. Every thread of my staff operation. My home here, the distaff headquarters, and all the agents I had on active work in the field. Everyone. Everything. All hit at effectively the same hour on the same day of the week." My voice tailed off. I was too deeply shocked. Crezia poured me a glass of Amasek and took one herself. All of it. Gone. The operation I had spent decades building up, the friends and allies I had drawn together. All my visible resources had been identified, targeted, and eliminated. Apart from dear Fischig slogging his way back to meet us, we were all that was left. I felt disconnected more than anything else. The network of intelligence and active personnel I had built up since the start of my career had been brutally taken from me. I was alone. I wanted nothing, nothing more than to see this Kanyar the Sharp face to face and make a reckoning. I went to bed, the Amasek untouched, and slept fitfully. In the small hours, I woke painfully from a dream I couldn't quite remember at first. As I lay in the darkness, the details slowly returned to me. I had been dreaming about the escape from Spaten. Medea and Yekud Vance had been calling out to me, begging to be rescued. I remembered the sensation of taking Medea's hand and clutching out at Vance, who couldn't quite reach me. The Janissaries shot him down, cutting his body apart with lasfire. His psychic death scream had cut into my mind like a hot wire. And that's what had woken me. Hadn't it? I woke again at 4. The night was quiet, except for the click of the mountain crickets. Something was wrong. I got up, slid the auto-pistol out from under the mattress, and crept out into the landing. I could hear Amos snoring in his room, and the distant sighs of Crezia in slumber. Alina's door was open. I looked in. The bed was empty and the quilt cast off onto the floor. I edged down the corridor with my back to the wall and my weapon raised in both hands, almost as if I was praying. There was a light shafting out from under the next door. The bathroom. I heard water gurgle and light suddenly flooded me as the door opened. I aimed the gun.
Oh, God! Golden Throne, sir, what the hell are you do—
I slapped my hand across Alina's startled mouth and pulled her into the shadows.
You scared the hell out of me,
she whispered once I relaxed my grip. Sorry.
I was just going to the bathroom.
Sorry. Something's wrong.
Gregor, what's that noise?
Crezia's voice floated down the landing.
Get back in your room, I hissed.
In a typically Crezia Bershildi manner, she did the opposite. She was pulling on her silk robe as she padded down to join us.
What is damn well going on?
For once, just shut up, Crezia, I snapped.
Well, excuse me all to hell.
I pushed them both behind me and crept down towards the door of the box room.
Nice ramp, said Crezia.
I was only wearing a wrap.
Will you be serious just for a minute?
I snarled back.
Please, doctor, urged Alina. This is serious.
The box room door was shut and dark.
See, said Crezia. No problem.
I felt the doorknob and realized it was loose. Crezia jumped as I kicked the door in and aimed my gun at the bed. The empty bed. Alina turned on the light. The wispy, fraying strands of Tal's bindings were still tied to the bedstead. He'd bitten through them, or tugged them off.
Golden Throne, he's gone!
Oh, no,
Crezia murmured.
I only loosened his bonds a little.
You did what?
I told you. I told you I was worried about the constriction, the lividity in his hands and his...
You didn't tell me you'd slackened them off, I raged.
I thought you'd understood what I meant.
I ran downstairs. The unlit hall was pale with moonlight that slanted in through the half-open front doors.
He can't have gone far. What does it matter anyway?
Crezia called after me. I stepped out into the street. There was no sign of anyone or anything. The cool shadows of the night spread fluidly across the flagstones. Tal, I was sure, was long gone. I went back inside and Crezia turned on the hall lights and screamed. Fabes was bent over in the corner, like a man who has fallen asleep sitting up. But he was very dead. His throat had been slashed. A wide pool of blood was leaking outward slowly from his hunched form.
Do you see now, Crezia? Do you?
I yelled up at her. Tal was loose. He knew who I was and where I was. We had to leave.
Fast.